Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome back all to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. This is Rob D., the Deadpool Hitter. You can always catch me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter, as well as my wonderful co-host Jeff Zimmerman at Jeff W. Zimmerman and Rob Silver at Rob Silver. Today's episode, we're going to do a little head-to-head match between Christian Encarnacion Strand and Trevor Story for anyone playing in the NFBC format. These probably represent the two best players that will be entering the hitting player free agent pool, and what we can expect from both of them going forward, possibly rest of season, and which one might fit your team best. We also dive into a couple of Jeff Zimmerman's recent articles on Fangraphs.com, including his Mining the News, which is also great. Always a great article, always a great read, where he kind of mentioned some things about pitchers trying new grips and spinning balls differently. And we kind of just get into, like, when can those things become actionable? Should they become actionable? Whether or not we should dive into it quickly, and sometimes you have to, because the rate at which we're getting information these days is just, you have to act quickly. So we get into that. We talk about Brendan Rodgers' rest of season value once he comes back to the team for the Colorado Rockies, and we talk about Jeff's part two of his dive into the stuff metrics and the pitch modeling that just very prevalent these days in baseball and fantasy baseball as well. And then we get into a little bit of a dive with the MLB Trade Rumors article talking about the 50 top trade candidates at the trade deadline. Kind of dove into a little bit of Jeff Zimmerman's research on baseballhq.com, where he talks about the percentage chances of people in those articles in previous history and what's the percentage chance they get traded. And we'll kind of talk about which teams might be looking to sell and players that can impact and we can be actionable on once those players leave the team. So and we talk about a whole bunch of other things in between that. So I hope everyone enjoys the episode and having a wonderful summer. Thanks for listening.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob DiPietro, co-host of the show. I'm here with Rob Silver, Jeff Zimmerman. What's going on, fellas? How are we on this glorious Thursday of July 20th?
No, just nothing. It's great. There is nothing going on. The lawn's mowed. The weather's fine. Let's just keep it that way. I'd like to have one day like this week.
Did you mow the lawn, or did the boy mow the lawn, or the girl, or Ruby?
It was me and the boy. It was a tag team. I did part of it, and I actually did it when I was like falling asleep writing. I was like, I'll just go outside and mow. Like,
so you're doing drunk. You're having half a bottle of bourbon, and then you go mow the lawn at night. Is that what I'm hearing, Jeff?
I have done that before, but it wasn't this time.
This looks judgment-free zone. If that's what you did last night, you can admit that here.
I think I would say about 90% of the lawn mowing done in my neighborhood is not by anyone sober.
That should be the Kansas State motto. We mow our lawns drunk.
Right on the license plate border.
Well, I think everyone's got like the beer holder in their, you know, riding lawnmower right there.
Sure.
And it's usually like, you know, a good old 24-ounce beer right there and just enough to get the lawn done and head inside.
That's awesome.
No matter how much pollen accumulates in that can of beer, you just slam it down. By the time you're done mowing, it's piss warm and full of, you know, grass and pollen, but it's still all good. It's part of the job.
You hope, like, you don't have the 24-ounce koozie, but at least you throw like a 12-ounce one on the bottom to try to like save as much coolness as possible. But yeah, it doesn't help.
There you go. I know you I think you probably have some crafty, like, you know, over the shoulder sling or something, like some kind of cooler that you're carrying with you with a couple of stashes in there. You know, you can't ride with just one full beer.
That's amateur hour. That's rookie league baseball if you're doing that.
Let's smarten up a little bit here. Rob, how are you doing, man? Everything good?
I'm doing great. I just finished a workout. I'm not going to tell you what kind of workout. People can draw their own conclusions, but I felt really good. So I'm.
Were you using the Buffalo bar that I saw you talking about?
It was not. I popped my hamstrings a couple of months ago. So it's been a bit of a healing process, but it's, you work through it. So it was my first time lifting heavy in a couple of months. So it it felt pretty, for anybody who doesn't work out, like it just, when you can't do something that you know your body is capable of doing because of injury, like let's call this the Anthony Rendon syndrome. It feels shitty. So when you can get back to a point where you can do it again, it feels really good. So
and when I started this podcast with you guys, you were the healthy one of the bunch. You were the opposite of the Van Lee who was always hurt.
No, like, I don't talk about it.
You hurt your ankle. You hurt your hand. Oh my God! It's just are you becoming injury prone, Rob?
Much like Anthony Rendon, it means I'm getting old. The difference between me and Anthony Rendon is I play through this shit and I don't complain about it. So Jeff at the end of the season will be like, Rob, I've been looking at your stats. They kind of suck this year. I think you were playing through an injury. And I'll be like, yes, Jeff, I was in fact hiding six or seven injuries I didn't want to talk about. But anyways, I'm sure nobody is going to make fun of me for talking about this at all whatsoever.
No,
but no, everything's great.
Fun. Good. Good. Fantastic. All right. Let's get into a bunch of stuff here. We got Mr. Kristen Encarnacion Strand, otherwise known as CES, being called up by the Reds. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago, how we could possibly fit in with the team. And just wanted to see what you guys think of the potential, you know, floor ceiling for him, as well as putting him up against Trevor Story as for like rest of season NFBC, probably the biggest hitters left remaining in the pool that we'd be able to go after. And which one you guys think might be, you know, a little bit worth more of our fantasy dollar. Jeff, want to go first?
I think you go after Strand if he's available, but I think it's not going to be, I don't know if he'll fit into everyone's team, especially on like 12 teamers. They may just have their DH and corners set. Even one of my 15s is that way. Like he's just not going to, I'll probably put in a bid for him, but he's not someone that's going to break the bank and someone else will spend more. So I think it really comes down to your individual team. If you really just have not been able to find the power and he's that option, you kind of just go after him. Compared to Story, I think it's pretty close. It sounds like, I mean, the Red Sox are using Yu Chang at freaking shortstop. Like he's one of those ones that's like Willie Calhoun. Like once you roster him and you start playing him, you failed as a team at that point. Something has gone horribly wrong. You have no minor league, like no minor league system. So it's just like, we had to have Story. It's like, we've lost, you know, we just let people go and we're just being cheap. And I think that's both of what the Red Sox and the Yankees did. And they haven't, I don't know exactly what's going on, but with Story, I think he's going to come up and I think they're going to try to play him as much as possible. The problem is they just have a lot of DHs. So if it may be kind of hit and miss for a week or two, if he's playing all the time, like I think it'll be key to kind of see in the minors how much he's playing. So in the places he was drafted, he's already been probably picked up in most of those cases. But in the places where he'll like become available once he gets to the majors, at least we'll know he was playing shortstop most of the time, or it's just been every other day DH, then maybe if he's every other day DH, you kind of stay away from Story.
So before I get into Encarnacion, it's so bad for the Red Sox middle infield that Justin Turner is playing second base. And my answer, and like, I'm not just being like a Rob Silver asshole when I say this. If Justin Turner at 37 is capable of handling physically and defensively second base, why hasn't he been playing second base one or two or 3 days a week, like every single week this season? Because the Red Sox, second, as bad as their shortstop's been, their second base has been equally bad. Like their in middle infield has been just a black hole all season. I don't know, like I didn't put this on Twitter, but like it's almost like they have Mookie Betts envy. It's like the Red Sox. Like, I can't believe you fucking gave away Mookie Betts and, like, you got nothing for him. Like, imagine this team if you still had Mookie Betts. And the Red Sox response is, oh, no, we have our own Mookie Betts. His name is Justin Turner. He can play anywhere still, even though he's old as dirt. And to be clear, Justin Turner is having an awesome season this year. Like, hitting-wise, Justin Turner has been – he's on a like a red-hot streak right now. But he's been solid all year. So this is not a shot ultimately at Justin Turner, though I do question whether he can handle second base. Like I know when he was with the Mets really early on in his career, he played a fair bit of second base. But even then, like my memory, Rob, you may have a better memory of what he was like defensively at second base. Like I remember him more as a Jeff McNeil, as in he could stand at second base and make the basic plays at second base, as opposed to being ever. Like, he was more athletic back then. Like, all of us 10 years ago, we were more athletic than we are today. But, like, is your memory roughly that? He was never a good second baseman defensively. He had hit tools and flexibility-ish.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. He pretty much just made the routine play, never made the errors on those routine plays. And I think that mattered for a lot. Didn't get to many things, you know, toward the hole. Good, I think he was decent to his left, but not to his right. But, and obviously, you know, of course, he left the Mets and became a stud hitter because the new team let him, you know, swing the way he wanted to. Because as we talked about prior, that's a thing. Don't swing this way, young man, because we don't the way we want you to swing. But it is so interesting to see him in 37-year-old playing at second base. And I 100% agree with you. If that was the case, why wasn't this done earlier instead of rolling out the Christian Arroyo and, you know, Pablo Reyes rolling up the middle.
Even Enrique like this year is useless. Like, he's terrible.
So
that's a long way of saying the Red Sox, who are still kind of hanging on the fringes of the playoff race, really need Trevor Story could be a godsend. I know teams at this time of year often will make the, we didn't make trade at the deadline, but look at this player who just reemerged from the injured list. It's like we just traded for Trevor Story. And usually you roll your eyes as a fan of that team saying, like, fuck off. You didn't make a trade. Don't tell me that this injured guy coming back is your trade. But for the Red Sox, like, forget Chris Sale. Like, obviously getting Sale back in the rotation would be huge. If they can get Trevor Story playing, you know, 6 days out of seven, that's game changing for them because of who he's replacing. And Trevor Story, like, he may not be Colorado Trevor Story, but still a damn good player. And if he's running, he's a really good fantasy player. Like, he still is a 2020 player projected over a full season. So of the two players, and I'll get to Encarnacion, which I know is the player we're actually supposed to be talking about, not Justin Turner or really Trevor's Story. But Trevor Story, I think, is the best bat by far that's going to be available the rest of the season. And should be able to fit on every team, should have position eligibility in most leagues relative, like at some in September. So to the extent second base isn't that useful to you, but he'll get shortstop too. But of course, like Encarnacion Strand should be added on every single team in every single league. I'm in this weird position in all five of my teams. I know people care deeply about my fantasy teams. So I'll pull a Curtis and talk about my teams as if people care about my teams. Sorry, Curtis, I can't help myself. I'm really strong in power in every single team. Like, this doesn't happen for me usually, but it's just worked out that way. Why has it worked out that way? Because I have JD Martinez on every single team. I have Jose Siri on every single team. And I have Jack Sawinski on every single team. And if you have all three of those players, even if you don't play Siri and Sawinski every single week because of left-handed matchups, because of Tampa lineup stuff, like between the three of them, even if I didn't draft power, I'm just really strong in power. So he's not super useful to me. And I imagine there are some teams like that where at the point of the season where like category management matters a ton. But he's a good enough hitter with average wise. I'm weak in average. So I would still pick him up if the price were right and I could afford him and use him. So it'll be interesting to see how much money people have left to throw at a hitter this week, just given where a lot of teams are financially. But I would expect him still to go easily over $100. There'll be multiple teams in every single league that still have money and are willing to go down to $50 if they have to pick up somebody. the other thing, and sorry, I know this is a long rant, different than Boston is, and we've talked about this in the Discord a fair bit, there are 10 hitters right now for 10 spots in Cincinnati. I don't think Cincinnati just trades one of the hitters to solve this problem. I think from a real baseball perspective, depth is a good team. Injuries can happen. Play matchups. You have guys like Votto who do have lefty-righty splits. So like, there's a bunch of guys like that. So I think that it's a real luxury if you're Cincinnati that maybe in the offseason maybe you do something to free up everyday playing time. But for now, this is called a rich man's problem. And I think Cincinnati likes having a rich man's problem. And unless they make a big play for a starting pitcher, like the two White Sox pitchers, you know, Giolito or Lance Lynn, I don't know that they'd be in on an Ohtani. I don't know that there's a trade where they trade something off their major league roster. They have enough stud prospects left who are not on their active major league roster. I think most trades they would make, they need more bullpen depth. I mean, they need pitching. Like, it's not a great insight, but I don't know that they break the logjam, which means I don't know that CS plays more than like 70 to 80% of the time, which that's not a knock at him. He'll be very good in 70 to 80% playing time, but I think that just caps him. A healthy Trevor Story, I think, will play every single – they will squeeze as much out of him as they possibly can because they need every at-bat from Trevor Story in Boston. So that's why beyond just my teams, I would lean Trevor Story if I knew that Trevor Story was going to be healthy all season the rest of the way.
Yeah, and you brought up the stolen base if he steals. Like, I noticed that last year Story's what you wrote a great article once on RotoWire, the stolen base opportunity attempt rate, and it was the lowest of his career last year. But the Red Sox in general too didn't steal a lot as a bunch last season. This year they've had a big increase from last season, as well as a lot of teams, but they've had a decent increase. And I was just wondering if you thought, like, right now he's projected for 5 stolen bases roughly and 135 plate appearances, so that does give him, you know, about one in every, you know, 24 plate appearances, and pretty much like a similar rate to guys like Francisco Lindor, Christian Yelich. And I just wanted to see if you guys thought that he would, you know, really be stealing that much. He is a head first slider. I watched some videos. I wanted to see if you, because I know that was the thing with Harper, with, you know, his elbow and sliding, and the internal brace would break, you know, all this crazy stuff that people throw out. I don't know if you think maybe perhaps the stolen base stuff would be tempered a little bit.
I think I wouldn't count on it. It's like, if I need, like, oh, Story's coming back and I need to make up on stolen bases, I'm not counting on it. Like, if I get it, I think that's fine. Like, if he starts running and it's all great, but it's one of those deals where I could just see team shut him down or he just goes off. Like, it's just tough to know at this point. Maybe if he's stealing a bunch in the minors, you can adjust from there, but I wouldn't count on him being a stolen base any savior.
I think that's fair. I think it's in his range of outcomes for him to steal a half dozen stolen bases in like August, September. It's not really in CES's range of outcomes in the same way.
In his career, maybe.
Yeah, so you're just you're buying a lottery ticket in terms of the stolen bases. I agree with Jeff. Like, they may not come. You don't know. None of us know. Trevor Story doesn't know.
There's been a lot made about, you know, Christian Encarnacion's strength rate. I'm including his last name. His chase rate.
No, I see what you did there.
You see what I did there. There's been a lot to make about his, you know, chase rate in the minors, and I hadn't really like parlayed into a lot of Ks. Is that like a concern for you guys? Are you not really concerned with them? Like, you know, anyone who makes really good impact on the ball if they're just making contact when they can.
It was a little bit. He kind of had that same makeup that Adele and Kalenic first had when they came up. Ooh, like,
that's crazy. Ooh. It was like faint praise. Reminds me a lot of Joe Adele and Kalenic. Wow.
Well, they chase the ball, but they make hard contact when they make contact. But he seems to be fine in the majors. Like, there's others that haven't had this problem. I mean, that have the same thing and survived. His pitch mix seems to be like they're still throwing him fastballs, or they're not just breaking balls. So I think he can handle pitches at different ones. I wonder if there's something to that. If if someone just can't hit breaking balls, that's what they just throw all the time. But I mean, it's just 9 plate appearances, but he doesn't seem to be lost. Like throwing him fastballs, he doesn't have some huge swinging strike rate. So I think he's good so far, but that was kind of, he had some traits of those two. And I think that was in play. And I think a lot of people, I don't know if those names particularly came out, but that's just kind of a concern.
Am I wrong, guys, that he got a lot better recently in the minors, though, also, that when you look at his rolled up minor league numbers in terms of chase rate, in terms of strikeout rate, they look a little bit ugly, but I thought that he was getting like that the curve was pointed in the right direction in terms of that towards the end of his time in the minors. And why, if you want to be uncynical about Cincinnati, he might have been a guy who actually really did need the extra time, even though his surface stats were impressive in the minors, to just get ready for the majors. And that a lot of that, he was just improving over time. And therefore, it wouldn't be shocking if in the majors he doesn't struggle, he'll strike out a fair bit, but in 2023 baseball, it will be sustainable and he'll be able to have a career. Am I wrong about that?
No, I went, look, there's actually the game logs, fan graphs. And it was like since June 1st, his strikeout rate was only 19%.
Yeah. Minors. So that's really good for a power.
I wish we had swinging strikeouts. I can't get it by game. I could probably figure out what that was, but
his chase rate since June 1st was 35% compared to the 39 overall that he's had in the minors. So that's gotten better.
Yeah. But which isn't to say that like major league teams are pretty smart. They may find a hole, right. a hole in his approach and his zone velocity. Like there's lots of things that pitchers in the major leagues can do that minor league pitchers can't do. He may go 0 for 27, and suddenly it's like, well, of course he's struggling. Like, we should have seen this coming. But I think he's, to me at least, he was solid enough in the minors in that I don't worry about the kind of like 200 batting average. He's just not good enough to play in the majors. The projections certainly think that he's major league ready in a way that some of the guys were not. So he like Joe Adell never projected as a great major league hitter. Kalanick didn't project as a great, like we were just hoping that those minor league stats kind of carried over, but the projections didn't buy into it. Whereas with Encarnacion, like at a surface level, it's a playable profile.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the impact on the ball when it does make contact, his own contact is fine. I think he'll be good. There's like Jeff mentioned, there's some guys who make it with, you know, aspire high chase rate. I think it gets thrown out too much as a blanket term. He chases too much and that's it, you know, end of story with some analysis that I hear. And I don't think that's the case for every single person. All right, top into Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News on Fangraphs from July 19th. Jeff, you had some interesting nuggets in here. One thing I really had been fascinated by is just talking about like the people adding a new pitch with the grips and how the pitch changes after that. And it's just so much analysis we can absorb these days. And just like, how do you guys deal with what's real and what's actionable? Like if a pitch moves differently, all of a sudden, is it, you know, do you have to jump on it immediately? Or do you wait a little bit to see how it does over a course of a couple of starts?
On a change in like movement, like that happens all the time. I sort of ignore it, but I note it. Like I've got a bunch of notes from players and it's like, oh, they said he's changed his movement and I'll put like, he changed his movement and add a date. Now, if they added a pitch or got rid of one, that's a little bit bigger deal. Like I'll kind of look in to see if it was horrible or if this new one's doing good. Maybe keep track of it. If it's like Rich Hill added a splitter and it was like, he's had it for one game. Like, okay, it's Rich Hill. Is it really going to make a ton of difference for some guy that's throwing, you know, high school kids are throwing harder than he is? Dude, it's 85, man. Have you been to like high school games? It's so bad.
Yeah, I have.
It's like, oh, I can be Rich Hill. I mean, all these kids is like, yeah, that's what he's throwing. I mean, you got to throw a curveball like he does. And, but that has me a little bit more interested than like, there was this Carrasco one, like, oh, he changed his movement a little bit. Really? Has it changed that much? Kind of I think it was the Mining the News before Clark Schmidt has kind of changed the slider. And since then things have kind of taken off. Like, I don't think all of us kind of noticed that, So I kind of, that one's a little bit more interesting. Michael Grove has added a cutter. That's kind of interesting too. Like those are the ones I've done, but it was like, oh, Carrasco changed this and got this. And like the results have been the same. Like maybe they're just trying to work with him right now. And I just, like I said, I kind of blow it off, but I do note it because maybe that is when like, oh, he started playing better in the second half. And I just have the note for him to go look at later.
So for me, it's a chicken and egg that you can actually answer. So if it's just he added a pitch, he's changed his grip on pitch, but the results didn't change, improve, then I could give a shit about it. Like, it's interesting, but who cares? It's noise to me in a lot of ways. Whereas if a pitcher who had, let's say, a 12% strikeout minus walk rate, so it was mediocre to bad, suddenly has a 20% strikeout minus walk rate. Strikeout rate shoots up, walk rate shoots down. And then I see he changed his pitch mix. He changed, added velocity, added spin rate, added a new grip. Then it's not in and of itself enough. It depends obviously on the sample size. If he just did it in two games against, you know, Kansas City and Detroit, then you can roll your eyes and say, whatever, it was Kansas City and Detroit. Whereas if you're evaluating a pitcher in the winter and it's like a 12 start sample, it can be really, it can be an explanation that you can hang your hat on why did this change? So it really depends, but I'm way more interested in seeing some results and then having that as a validation. The challenge in real time in the season though, as you know, Rob, is you see that news note and you have to make a call, because if you don't pick him up in Fab this week, you're never getting a shot at him. Or if you do get a shot, it's because he sucks and somebody else cuts him. So you do, like in real life, you do need to make these calls. And I think most of the time it's just noise and you're way better off ignoring it. The problem is we're really, really shitty in real time at deciding this is real versus the, if one out of 10 times this is real, this is actionable, and this is going to make a big difference. We are horrendous forward looking at this is going to make a difference. LTD, we can all go LTD and say after the fact, I knew that's how it was all going to work out. That's really easy after the fact. It's much harder predicting it in real time. And the proof is in the pudding. I put my FAB money on the line to get it. So I think you're going to be wrong way more than you're right, though. So it's not a criticism, obviously, of Jeff. I'd way rather be flagging this. This is what they're saying than not knowing it. But I think most of the time you're better off ignoring it at the time.
And I think my favorite part about Jeff's articles is when he notes a player making a change or talking about the coaching staff, talking about the player making a change, and Jeff brings in the actual data, and it's just really like, hey,
nothing
buddy,
you haven't
been doing anything differently, guys.
You're full of shit. You're just full of shit.
It's really the best summary that he adds on to. I just love that. It's just like and so I'm reading it. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And then Jeff comes in with the, nah, don't even, it's not real.
Yeah. You need, when you get that soundboard of yours, Rob, you need a liar, liar, pants on fire drop that every time Jeff says, so I hear so-and-so is added a cutter. And it's like, no, he's never actually thrown a cutter even once in his lifetime in a game. Liar, liar, pants on fire drop.
Absolutely. Jeff, you also made a note about Brandon Rogers probably returning for the Colorado Rockies by the end of the season, maybe by sometime in August. How do you guys feel about Brandon Rogers? Given the state of, I was looking at the middle infielders, and I noticed this when I was doing the Gladiator drafts at the All-Star break, and there is a lot of really good middle infielders right now currently in the game. I think a lot of the guys that were kind of going in the 200 areas, the guys like Tovar, Abrams, and Kim, they've really kind of bumped up in at least the projection for the rest of the season into a higher level of ranking. So how do you guys fit like Brendan Rodgers into this picture? You think he's just gonna be like a meh add into your team? What kind of profile do you think he's gonna bring?
I think it'd just be a streamer for me. Like he doesn't steal bases. He'll at home, it's really not a ton of power. I mean, he'll have a good average. That's kind of what he provides and probably good counting stats. So if he's playing every day, I think I'd have him as a home streamer, but nothing more than that.
Yeah. And I'm, so I agree. Like I'm, a lot of shit's going to have to go wrong on a lot of my teams for him to be possibly playable even at home. Like, if you're in contention in September, let's say he's back September 1st, most teams have that still matter have a shortstop and a middle infielder and a second baseman and a DH and a backup shortstop that are better than Brendan Rodgers at home. Rejection still like Brendan Rodgers. I don't really know why they like him so much.
I don't know why either.
Like, I guess they pull data and like he has such small samples for so long, but I just don't know that Brendan Rodgers, like, injured Brendan. If Carlos Correa is a shell of himself, and that was also an interesting piece in Mining the News that you guys can look at Fangraphs to see. But he's having a rough season, and you can explain it in a lot of different ways. Carlos Correa is ultimately like a really, really, really good established major league player. Brendan Rodgers was never that established player, and yet the projections would basically say Brendan Rodgers has a Carlos Correa-like offensive profile him. And I'm like, I don't buy it. Like, prove it to me. So if he were a free agent the day before I knew he was coming back to play at home, I don't know that I would bid on him. And maybe if I had an injury, I would change my mind, but I'm not really interested in Brendan Rodgers.
Okay, good. I've always been that kind of looking at Brendan Rodgers. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something in his profile that just led to the projection. Like you said, still really loving his output. So, all right, good. I could, that was on my own psych there too, just trying to find a little balance between, like, I don't really think this guy is much. So,
if one of us had said, like, honestly, Rob, I think Brendan Rodgers is the closest thing you'll find is to a league winner in fantasy baseball this year. I think he could change your teams. Like, if your team is in 11th place right now, you go grab yourself some Brendan Rodgers and everything's going to be okay. Just go to that happy place because you got Brendan Rodgers. You'd believe that to be true?
No. No, I wouldn't.
Here's what I would think.
I would have just been like, wait a minute, hold on a second.
I was hoping the other two of us would tell you to quit day drinking at this point.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you are off on freaking the rocker right then. Like, just put down the bottle right now, and we'll just go with two people for the rest of this podcast.
Unless you're about to mow Jeff's lawn. It's like, stop drinking, because you're drunk enough. You can mow all of Jeff's lawn right now.
Like, you got to get a drink, yeah.
What's in your post-workout drink, Rob?
That's right. Those aren't PCAAs.
It's a different type of chain amino acids.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. All right, Jeff, you also wrote another fantastic article, second part of the insight into some of the stuff metrics and how.
I love this one.
Yeah, this was really fascinating. I'm really loving what you're doing here because I think you're, at least you're attempting to tying up, anyone's thoughts about how we should use these metrics, if we should use them, and what it could bring, any type of value to fantasy. So if you want to go ahead and just give us like a summary of what this article brought to the picture.
This is the one where this should have been like the first thing anyone that is using this for fantasy should have been asking. If a player's stuff improves, what should we expect? And kind of the problem was we just didn't have a data sample. I mean, we have two and a half years worth of data. So I just did the comparisons from first half to second half from the two seasons and saw like, oh, if there's stuff, I'll do stuff to all of them, not just like from the bot and the one Eno has. If this changes this much, what has been the change in strikeout rate, walk rate, or whatever? And pretty much the gist of it is you can just go to the overall values. And they're the ones that are going to tell you what's going to happen, changes in that. There's some more work I can definitely do on like sample sizes and stuff. But if you can kind of set up like an X lookup or just do a comparison from like the last 3 weeks to maybe before that, that's probably the best way to tell like if someone's improving their stuff and what's moving up. The more I look into this, yeah, I just the other one was how much the command values are even more important than the stuff plus values. Like the commands are more relevant to your fantasy stats changes in that and affect them more than the one everyone, the stuff plus ones that everyone always talks about. So, I mean, I'm just kind of ignoring that and going with the pitching on mine. And I just hope everyone else listens to the, you know, follows all the other stuff ones, because it just doesn't matter as much. This is kind of a sidebar. I think most of the stuff values, like it's looking at all the characteristics of the pitch. I think this is more like teams have had this, like, okay, we know if you can throw like this, hopefully these will get the same results. But they don't use it like when the guy's throwing, or if they just look to see if he's changed any bit. It's not meant to be like an overall valuation. It's more to on the pitching coach, more with the development staff is where it's important. It's not important at all at this level. I think the key is just trying to find guys that have changed. If his stuff has gone up, the overall value 10 points, that's what you need to look at. You don't need to be looking at anything else. So that's kind of my gist. I've got some more work to do with this, especially moving from like the stuff value to the actual pitch results. I think that's going to be even more key is when should we, a pitcher comes in, he's throwing 100 miles an hour, he's got all this movement. This is kind of where we expect him to go. And then when do we start looking at where he actually went to? And I had kind of redone my PERA value so I could actually do that correctly and be able to work into it. So hopefully we'll get some more information on this, but this is where we should have been for a while.
I just want to read out, Rob, the last paragraph of Jeff's piece. Yes. For people who haven't read it, and because I think it is the key point. I believe this is again Jeff's writing. I believe stuff matters in two ways. One, small sample, and two, trying to find early changes. After that, result-based metrics should take over. The next big step, as Jeff says, is to find out when that crossover happens. Just let me, like, so it's not that this, and Jeff, the whole article points this out, it's not this is useless, but internalize what that last paragraph says. So if, let's say this winter, we have a pitcher who has only pitched in the major leagues 7 innings. They made 2 starts. They went 3 innings their first start, 4 innings their second start.
So Spencer Strider.
Tiny, tiny sample. For that pitcher this winter, looking at their stuff numbers is more useful than looking at their K-minus walk rate or anything else in the majors for those 7 innings. 2, during the season, if Mining the News says player X has changed his pitch mix, Jeff says, yes, they in fact have changed their pitch mix or their grip or the spin rate or their velocity, then stuff can be useful in quantifying that and showing you, oh no, they're a much better pitcher now than we thought they were 10 minutes ago. For the first start, 2 starts, we don't, Jeff doesn't quite know. That's, I guess, the next piece he's going to do. How many starts? It's like, the stuff is awesome now. The rest of the numbers should follow. But even with that, at a certain point, call it start 3, start 4, start 5, if it's not showing up, this is at least how I read Jeff's point, if it's not showing up in the actual results, then it's not actual. There's something wrong, and don't just assume it's going to change. The point I wanted to make is, so this winter, when we're going pitcher by pitcher and going deep, crazy deep on evaluating everybody, for 98-99% of the player pool, you are so much better off looking at all the traditional results-based stats and projections than you are stuff plus control plus, like, whatever. And I don't mean no disrespect to Eno or Mr. Bot, whoever. I don't know if we know who Bot.
Oh, I could.
Cameron Grove. His name.
Yeah,
Cameron Grove. Anyway, yeah. It's no disrespect to them. It's really useful. But like, we're fantasy players. We're trying to answer different questions there. I'm quite convinced, and this sounds mean. Again, I like Eno a ton. It's nothing personal to him. If the devil were playing fantasy baseball and he was trying to screw up his opponents, he would come up with this kind of a model. Because it sounds cool enough and it's credible enough and it's interesting enough that people are using it. And I think it's fucking people's fantasy analysis up really badly. and driving them into directions and decisions, small decisions. Like, it's not, let's, if it was so outlandish, then the devil in my little thing. And I apologize to anybody like religious who believes in Satan and stuff, though I'm not that sorry. It's like the devil, if it was crazy shit, like if it was like Wade Miley's going to be the best pitcher in baseball this year, you need to draft Wade Miley, then people would roll their eyes and like, I don't believe it. This is credible enough and like based on reality enough that people are latching onto it. And I think it's brilliant. I love the fact that people are so into it. And the last point I'll make on this from our last episode, I am so curious to see what Derek Hardy comes up with, because Derek is only, he only ultimately cares about the things we care about, which is, does it improve my projection process and projection accuracy? If it does, I can include it. If it doesn't, then I can't include it. I won't include it. It's useless to me. And I need to be able to test it and back test it to be able to satisfy myself. And it's not that he's omnipotent. It's not that he's a god, but he's driven by the same things we care about and answering the same questions we care about. So I'm so curious to see what he ends up with and how it gets ruled out, hopefully really soon.
I think this is going to be something that we'll probably experience in First Pitch Arizona. I could imagine that might get this. This might be a topic because it's just
doesn't sound right to me. Doesn't no? sound. I don't. Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. It's
hope there's security in the room at that point.
Well, no, it's a healthy thing. I like people. It has nothing to do with anything, and I think there's real value to it. I just don't know that it's being applied properly to fantasy.
Right. And I think a member of the Discord and Pull Hitter Patreon, Trevor Tipton, he was mentioning too that he was mentioning this for a while back that he uses a pitching plus in his DFS evaluation, and he said from the start that it's always, he thought, had given him an edge and always been the best thing to look at out of all those numbers. So
it's by far the best one to use. There's no, the other thing I'll note that I stated in the article is, if anyone says like the Stuff Plus is up or whatever and it's limiting contact, there's nothing to show that their Stuff Plus has increased or any of the metrics have increased and it's limiting batted ball data in any way that I could find. That's just one that can be thrown out. It's all strikeout and walk based.
Yeah. Okay. You can find by definition a guy whose Stuff Plus is off the charts who has a really artificially low BABIP. But you could also show a guy who like that, you would expect if everything was the normal distribution curve, that those two things would line up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players. But that's just random and it's not predictive of what's going to happen. It's what just right. did happen. It's not A caused B. It's A and B happen to exist for the same pitcher.
Right. And Jeff, will you attempt to like dissect the individual pitch numbers, like for a slider?
I'm getting there.
Okay. I just wanted to know if that was a thing you would look into.
Well, as I had to redo that PERA, it's kind of like going to each one, like, oh, are they missing bats? Are they able to throw strikes with it? Right. And there's one more test I need to run on it, on that one, so I can get everything to work right. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks. Like I said, it's kind of just one thing. I still have to, the other fantasy implications of mining the news, the stuff that's useful now, this stuff I could probably do in the off season. It's just kind of like, oh, when I catch up with everything in season, I can do this. And that's kind of what happened over the break. Like, I
bet some people would pay for a book if this was a chapter in your book there, Jeff.
I don't want
to give you ideas because we're going to have competing books this winter, apparently, but, but I think this would be great material for a book.
I know I am trying to get something else in one, and I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm not even going to mention it, but my God, if I can actually have someone do something for me, it'll be great. So, but no, this is part of the book and the plan for it. It's just, I had found out last year, I was like, I want to take too much of a break when the season's over. So I want to at least get some stuff in line before the season's out.
That's awesome. My favorite line of yours is that continuously here is someone wrote this in a book. It is just classic. It consistently comes up in the Discord or on Twitter. I constantly see Jeff saying, if only someone wrote this in a book. And it's just so too, like, even if people have read the book, it's so much information in there. There's some stuff that I even say, oh yeah, I guess that was in the process. I forget because there's just so many good things in there. It's hard to remember everything in there, but just one of my favorite line of yours. It should be like,
so what you're saying is of Jeff, the book. Jeff can also just make shit up now and claim it's in the book and assume nobody's gonna call him and saying, what page of the book is this on again, Jeff? I can't find it in the book. I've plowed through the entire thing and I can't find it anywhere. Can you point me to the page?
I only have the 2016 edition with me right now, so you're kind of hosed.
Which is actually the best thing about having a digital copy too. As well as I love the physical. I love putting my thumb on it and making it messy. But the digital one is cool because you could do your control F and, you know, like search something and then like, boom, there it is. You go right to that page. But and then you can go to the physical page. All right. Now I know what page it's on. But yeah, there's just a ton of info on it. I can't wait to read the next one. I'm ready to draft this year again, Jeff. So whenever you're ready, put it out there.
There was talk of an index for about 2 minutes. And it basically turned into fuck that. It was just like, we were done. I know some people said it's like, it could be easy or whatever, but it's like, we'd have to check it and everything. Like, no, sorry. We have it listed at the beginning, all the little headings and you can digitally search it, but sorry.
Yeah. Good enough. I think there's enough stuff in there to make you better. It doesn't need to be improved as such. All right, let's move to some trade deadline talk. MLB Trade Rumors does, you know, an article, top 50 trade deadline candidates. Jeff, you did some research on Baseball HQ, kind of looking into the percentages, chances of anyone on this list getting traded. And I guess wanted to bring up some of the players on this list, or maybe if you guys had a specific player or position you thought, or a team in general. But I was looking a little bit at the White Sox pitchers, and also too, like, if these guys get moved, who can replace them? Is there anyone fantasy worthy that might replace Lucas Giolito and Lance Lynn in the Chicago White Sox lineup?
No. simply with them, I was interested how he got hurt. Davis Martin. Like if he would have been called up, but right now there isn't anyone that's really, you know, looking great. The one thing I could see with them is they have a lot of nice bullpen pieces. It's tough to know. Every year it's like, oh, they have these four guys, but only like three get traded. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see who wins that lottery. Is it going to be Lopez? Are they just going to keep Graveman? I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But for them, I think you kind of just have to add everyone and kind of see what happens. The one thing with that article is like, I just look back to kind of see how accurate they were, and the big one to focus on, they're about a little over 50% and just below 50%. For the first 10, they're just over it or maybe 60%. And then for the next, from 11 to 20, they're around like 48-49%. So if you kind of just focus on those are kind of like the guys that they've hit on really good. Like the other ones will still kind of get moved, but these other ones are just like so obvious. And then you can kind of look to see who's available. I think one thing I've looked at is there's some middling pitchers on really bad teams, like Paul Blackburn. If he kind of went to the Reds, I'd be a lot more interested, especially with trying to get a win. I mean, he might get lit up in the smaller park, but depending on what you're looking for, I think you can kind of get some of those starters on bad teams, and hopefully you can, there could be like an improvement with them.
Like maybe a Michael Lorenzen as well, who's also in that top 10 of the list. And I don't know. Do you guys think Marcus Stroman is a candidate to get traded? Do you think he's going to get traded? The Cubs are an interesting team, I think, in general. They have Bellinger on this list, and that can possibly open up a spot for like a younger player like Pete Crow Armstrong. There's tons of stuff, but Stroman, I was just trying to think about a good team that would fit, you know, him. Like, obviously, a lot of teams need pitching. And that's the thing. Everyone needs pitching. So it's not like there's
The right? Reds, I think they need the a ground Reds, ball guy.
Yeah, I don't know if Chicago would trade him in the division, but yes, he would be a tremendous pitcher for the Reds. Just keep him on the ground as much as possible. And he is Marcus Stroman a guy you necessarily want pitching like, you know, a big playoff game? Maybe, maybe not. He's not like a true dominant starting pitcher. But the Reds just need guys who are not awful, like just like above, slightly above average starting pitchers. Make that offense viable, though it hasn't been quite there this past week for the Reds, but that'll fix itself. So I think Stroman would be great there. Like Baltimore, you can say the same thing about.
Right.
I think Stroman on Baltimore would be an interesting addition for to just like Baltimore's rotation has been pretty good, all things considered, this year. But I think Stroman would be a nice solidifier for that rotation also down the stretch.
That's I like that one. I was going to mention the your team, the Blue Jays, just in case Alec Manoah isn't back, but I forgot about Ryu coming back too. He should be right around the corner. But I guess if there was any concern about those two, they can also possibly make a move to fortify their chances going forward.
Yeah, I don't know that this front office brings back Marcus Stroman. I think that was
good point.
I think there's enough recent crap under the bridge that I don't know that he comes back.
Right. Jeff, you're a Kansas City Royal guy. What's the deal with Scott Barlow? Does he even attract enough interest here to be, you know, moved at this deadline? Or you think Royals are going to? Yeah. Okay.
The Reds, like he will go somewhere, mm-hmm. Depending on what they want to get, but he will, there's so many bad bullpens. Like Arizona could use him. My God. I don't think that'll be an issue. I think,
okay.
I'm surprised teams hadn't been like the Rangers and made an earlier move when they went out and got Chapman. It's like, dude, our bullpen sucks. Like, what are we waiting? Or are people just asking too much? I don't know what the deal is, but it's like, why suck for like a month? Like, you know, your bullpen shit, like start addressing it earlier and trying to get it improved. Why? I don't know. Like I said, I just wonder if teams are just like asking for way more than they're willing to trade, and they like know that the price will go down. But I was like, I think some teams should have been moving earlier. And like I said, there's just some horrible bullpens out there that are.
I think the Atlanta Braves are going to trade for Barlow. I think the Braves are going to add a bullpen arm, and
nice.
Alex Anthopoulos will trade for him to pitch the 6th, 7th, 8th inning. That's my prediction for where Barlow goes.
Hey, folks, do you want to make some money-making picks on MLB games? Then all you have to do is head over to Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players, you get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with my promo code, PULLHITTER, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. So you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with PULLHITTER at the promo code and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. And it's coming around the corner, the trade deadline. It's on August 1st. Do you think that's a good date for MLB to have it? You think it's like a good, solid enough date for teams to be a little bit, like, have a sense of urgency in making moves? Like, Jeff, I agree with Jeff. Like, I think teams should be not waiting for competition in the trade pool. It just makes some moves earlier. I really like that deal with that the Royals made with Chapman, because I think they got back, you know, what they need. You need some like young electric arms to, you know, try to stabilize that staff. But I don't know. It should be interesting. What about Shohei Ohtani? Is he going to get traded? Yes or no? I mean, we could talk, you know, everyone knows what to say about Ohtani, but you guys have an opinion on that? Should they? Obviously they should, but will they?
I don't think they will.
Yeah.
They should. And there are some teams that, my God, they should just drop everything they have and try to add him. Like, they can need the pitching, they need the hitting. Like, he such a difference maker, but I have no faith that the Angels will trade him. Like, this is their one chance to possibly improve their team, and they're just not, he's not going to resign there. Like, you're just going to get a second round pick for him where you could get a legitimate. I don't know if the Reds would. I mean, they have some great prospects. Like, oh my God, adding him to the team. I know it's like the whole DH bit, but They'll figure it out. You figure out a way to get Ohtani the best hitter in your freaking lineup, you know.
Everyone we brought up is going to the Reds. The Reds.
Well,
yeah, no, you're right, though. They have
the prospects. I'm trying to think of another team that's really loaded.
The Orioles.
Tampa is the team.
Tampa is the team
who has zero shot at re-signing him, who needs him desperately. Yeah. And has a deep enough system that I think people will pay a Tampa tax on their prospects. Assume if Tampa has this guy, he must be pretty good prospect. So they have the depth, they have the high level prospects. They
can even bring up the prospects. Like you just start filling in guys.
Totally. So they and like you add him both to the rotation and to the lineup. I think that it takes kind of a sinking Tampa, and they've obviously been really struggling of late, and make them really dynamic, needless to say. Again, my prediction is the Angels will win. Let's say they have 13 games between now and the deadline. I haven't actually counted how many they've got. I think they'll go like 11-2 and convince themselves we're winning not just a wild card, we're winning the division. And then from August 2nd until the end of the season, they will win 5 games total and finish 15 games under 500.
Am I being facetious? They only got 11 games.
But that is the Angels thing, is they will convince themselves that we're right in this thing one way or another. So we can't possibly trade Ohtani while we're right into it. And they are not into it, and they will finish 500.
I do agree with you, Rob. I think the Rays are such a sneaky, good team to land him, because they can give up not even their top guys, but a smattering of really good prospects and still not break up, like maybe even the Curtis Mead and Kyle Manzardo. They can just, throw them 4 or 5 other, you know, the Jonathan Aranda, maybe even, right? Yeah. Shane Boz, right?
Yeah. They can give a Chinese menu of pick one of these 6 guys from this bucket, one of 7 guys from this bucket, and 3 of legit have 30 guys to say pick 5 of these 30, and as they still have 25 of them left, and they're all interesting guys.
I'm really fascinated by that too. I think that would be, it's kind of what I want to see happen. Actually, I want to see too what the Rays would even, you know, bring to him. You know, they make him better, even better than he is, which would be astronomical. That staff would be really, really something else. McClanahan, Bradley, Glasnow, Eflin, and then you had Ohtani. It would really be something fascinating. Are there any teams, like that winning teams, that you think would be sneaky sellers at the deadline? Or like maybe not sellers, but how much improve, maybe trading one guy to make a better, improve their team elsewhere? I think we've seen this in the past, or just like, it kind of reminds me like a fantasy move. It's kind of like a good fantasy move I have in my trading leagues, where it kind of looks like I'm kind of not selling off, but on the brink of the playoff spot. But I kind of do like a, give up a guy to get 3 guys and improve my team and still make a good chance at a playoff run. But any winning teams that you think could be lined up to do this, Jeff?
I think like, the Brewers have always kind of surprised us this way. I think there's some that are like in it more than the Angels, where like the Padres could do something to bring in some players. I think the Mets, I think they should go pick one direction, but I don't know what they really need. Like they either need to be sellers or just sit with the team. Like I think maybe, or add some bullpen arm if that's what they really need to do. But
I said winning teams, Jeff.
Yeah.
No, the expected win. Those are the expected winning teams for sure. That's without a doubt.
The one, another one that's, I think they're going to have to trade either Jolks or McCormick, because I could see the Astros add some stuff, getting rid of, like, I think they want something good, and I think their outfield's, like, they'll just assume Alvarez can come back, but they need some pitching help. And I could see them possibly do something like that. And it has helped that Jolks and McCormick are kind of hot right now. And another team's like, oh, we need an outfielder, we'll add them. I think it's just kind of a hot streak, and they're really just not as good as they've been over this last month. But that's one where I think they can move some stuff, and they really need to kind of take a step forward, especially on the pitching front.
I think the challenge, Rob, is there are about 20 teams that want good, so it has to be an upgrade, young, because we don't want old guys, controllable, because I'm not trading for a rental starting pitchers. And I can't think of any of, like, who are these guys? Who are the teams who have all these surplus of young, good, controllable starting pitchers? And you can say, well, Miami still has a couple of those guys. And maybe they do. But, like, I don't know who Miami's trading. Like, I don't know who the next Pablo Lopez that they're just going to give up on. And then you're like, okay, so maybe Miami trades one of them. So that solves one of 20 teams who want one of those. Who are the other 19 guys? So, like, I think I don't think the trade deadline will be that active. Second, I think you're going to see a lot more Kyle Hendricks get traded than you are like the next Zach Gallen trade, because there just aren't teams who, if you have the next Zach Gallen, meaning like an on the verge, I have him for the next 6 years for really cheap, and I think he's going to be really good. Most teams aren't giving those guys up. Like, they're just not, even if they need hitting right now. So I think that there'll be a lot of underwhelming, and like people like the three of us will say, oh, that could be sneaky good, getting Kyle Hendricks onto that rotation. Like, I sort of like it for them getting Kyle Hendricks. And whatever, it's probably better for real-life baseball than it matters for fantasy, which is why I think a Marcus Stroman does get traded. Not that he's a young, controllable guy, but he's a guy who is an upgrade for a lot of teams in terms of, like, if he's replacing your fifth starter, Marcus Stroman is better than most teams' fifth starters who are in playoff contention, and therefore it's, like, a legitimate step forward for a lot of teams.
Yep.
One of the trickiest teams for me is the Yankees. Mm. Because of all the obvious reasons. But when you start actually digging into their roster, like, who would bring something back? The answer is not a lot of guys. Like, I don't know. Let's say the Yankees go into full sell mode. How much are you giving up for Luis Severino right now, given what we've seen from him over the last month? I know his last start was a little bit better, but boy, I not that I might not take a flyer on him, but I'm not giving up much for Luis Severino right now. And, like, you can say that about a bunch of their guys. It's like there's Glaber. Somebody might give up something for Glaber. And then there's Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes would bring a lot back. He could suddenly become the best reliever on the trade market if they want to trade him. And the thing is, guys, last place teams don't need closers. And if the Yankees are a last place team, what the hell do they need with Clay Holmes? I don't actually know that he's going to be traded, but he's the only guy they have that I think would really bring back a package for them that they would trade.
That's a good point on Severino, because when you said it, I immediately thought, like, well, it would have to be a little more than what they got for Montgomery, right? But then I just looked, because I thought Montgomery was a lot older, but Montgomery's actually only a year older, and it's just, he was the same age as Severino is now as when he got traded last year at 29, which is fascinating. I just seemed like, I guess Sevy got a little older as the time.
Well, he's also Severino's a free agent at the end of this season, right?
I think so. Right, he is a free agent 2024. Yes.
So that's the other thing is it's a big difference in terms of what you're willing to give up in terms of package if you're getting an extra year of control after this year. So if I'm getting the end of this season plus a year of control versus I'm getting nothing afterwards. I think Jack Flaherty, our good friend Rob,
good friend Jack,
who is pitching remarkably well right now. I'm not saying that you close your eyes and know there's. I don't need to check the box score tonight because Jack Flaherty's going, I'm going to be okay. But I think Jack Flaherty is going to go somewhere. I think he could be pitching for a contract. Like, and I don't buy into narratives, but I think he's both healthy, pitching pretty well on the right team. I think Jack Flaherty could be a nice addition to a lot of teams down the stretch.
Right. No, that makes sense. I think that's totally right. They have to strike while it's hot. While he's stringing consistent games, you know, they have to get out.
Because God fucking knows, Rob, he could give up 12 runs on 18 hits in his next start. It can happen.
It could really happen. It's so baffling too. I don't know how he falls into in and out of that. Maybe some pitch pitching guru
what's,
knows.
What's ironic on our that. Bet is if I had picked ERA as the metric, his ERA since we made the bet is actually really good. Like it would, I'd be winning if we had bet ERA. Yes. His whip is not close. Yeah. Like literally he'd need like, I did the math a couple of starts ago. He'd need like a 0.7 whip the rest of the way for me to win the bet. Whereas his ERA, like especially after the last, whatever it is, 4 or 5 starts, is like way sub 4. Like it's actually a really good ERA recently. A lot of smoke and mirrors. I'm not claiming it's all been pretty. I don't know what his ERA is, but like it's not awesome. Jack Flaherty could be get traded.
Alrighty, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. Me, Rob, and Jeff continue to talk for another 50 minutes to an hour. And if you want to catch the rest of that episode, you can head over to Patreon.com, put in Pull Hitter into the search bar, and you'll see the Pull Hitter Patreon there available. It's all there in my pinned tweet as on Twitter as well. If you want to head over to @DeadPullHitter, and you can see the pinned tweet, it'll take you right to Patreon.com. We're running a free trial right now for 1 week into the entry tier of $5, and that includes Launch Angle, where you get the other two podcasts that we do per month available, as well as everything I do weekly, monthly. It's all there. I do about 7 podcasts per week. You get lineup tools. You get a daily podcast where I go through the box scores and give you some really good breakdowns of the actionable players that we can, you know, kind of make a move on in Fab Leagues and wherever we play fantasy baseball. So hope everyone comes check that out. Again, it's a week trial, and you can see what we got to offer. And you can hear the rest of me and Jeff blabber on about fantasy baseball if you enjoy that. And anyone who recently left a rating or review, we really appreciate the support. I appreciate the support a ton. And thanks for anyone who's reached out via email or DM to give us any tips or suggestions about the show. And we really appreciate the feedback and the talking about fantasy baseball. It just continues to grow, and it's just wonderful. Glad to be a part of it, and thank you for everyone for listening. And for Rob and Jeff, I'm Rob D. We'll catch us back again in 2 weeks on the public feed of the Launch Angle Podcast. And once again, you can catch us every week if you join up on the Pull Hitter Patreon for the rest of the season. And all right, thanks for tuning in. Have a wonderful day, and don't be a bag of shit.